In 1974, a book appeared that would transform how millions of readers viewed the relationship between technology and humanity. Robert Persig's Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance became an unlikely cultural phenomenon, selling over 5 million copies and being translated into 27 languages. The book's subtitle, An Inquiry into Values, hints at its ambitious scope, but nothing prepares readers for the intellectual odyssey that unfolds within its pages. Steve Jobs cited it as one of his most influential reads, and the book remains required reading in countless philosophy, engineering, and literature courses worldwide. What makes this philosophical memoir so enduring is its ability to bridge seemingly unbridgeable divides between Eastern and Western thought, between technological and humanistic worldviews, and between rational analysis and intuitive understanding. The narrative follows a father and his 11-year-old son, Chris, on a motorcycle journey across America's northwestern states, accompanied by friends John and Sylvia Sutherland. This physical journey, winding through Montana's sweeping valleys and Wyoming's rugged mountains, serves as the framework for a much deeper intellectual exploration. As the motorcycles traverse the changing American landscape, from dense forests to open prairies, the narrator engages in what he calls a chautauqua, a series of philosophical discussions drawing from the tradition of traveling lectures popular in early 20th century America. These discussions explore the fundamental nature of quality, the divide between romantic and classical understanding, and the comprehensive history of Western thought from the ancient Greeks to modern times. What makes this journey particularly fascinating is that the narrator is haunted by his former self, Phaedrus, named after Plato's dialogue character who represents zealous philosophical pursuit. Phaedrus was a brilliant but troubled thinker whose radical philosophical inquiries into the nature of quality and truth led to his mental breakdown and subsequent electroshock therapy. This treatment erased much of his memory, effectively creating a new personality. Throughout the journey, the narrator grapples with fragments of memories, trying to reconstruct Phaedrus's revolutionary thinking while carefully maintaining his own psychological stability. The tension between past and present selves creates a mysterious subplot that gradually unfolds alongside the physical journey. The motorcycle itself becomes a perfect metaphor for the book's central concerns, serving as both a practical vehicle and a philosophical tool. When properly maintained, it represents the harmony between technological understanding, the classical, and aesthetic appreciation, the romantic. The narrator meticulously details motorcycle maintenance procedures, from adjusting handlebars to synchronizing carburetors, using these as practical examples of his philosophical points. He critically observes his friend's attitude toward their BMW motorcycle. They fear technology and avoid maintenance, preferring to have mechanics handle any problems, treating the machine as a mysterious black box. This approach, he argues, reflects a larger cultural problem, the artificial separation between our technological and emotional lives, a split that he believes has created a profound crisis in modern values and understanding. Through careful attention to motorcycle maintenance, he demonstrates how technical knowledge and aesthetic appreciation can be unified into a single, more meaningful whole. One of the book's most profound insights is its analysis of two fundamentally different ways of seeing the world. The narrator identifies these as the classic and romantic modes of understanding. The classic mode sees underlying form and function. It's analytical, precise, and focused on how things work. This approach breaks down complex systems into their constituent parts, seeking patterns and relationships that explain how components interact. The romantic mode values immediate sensory experience. It's intuitive, emotional, and focused on how things appear and feel, embracing the holistic experience without need for dissection. This division explains why some people are drawn to art while others to science, why some value intuition while others trust only what can be measured. The narrator demonstrates this through motorcycle maintenance. A romantic sees the gleaming chrome, hears the engine's roar, and feels the vibration of the machine as a unified experience. A classicist, meanwhile, sees the underlying systems and components. The precise timing of pistons, the flow of fuel through carburetors, the mathematical relationships of gear ratios. Neither view is complete on its own. True understanding requires both perspectives. The narrator recounts visiting mechanics who worked like chimpanzees, displaying no care or thought in their work. They listened to the radio while working, rushed through jobs, and showed no identification with their role. No saying, "I am a mechanic," he observes. These mechanics exemplified neither the romantic's appreciation for the motorcycle's beauty nor the classicist's understanding of its technical elegance. Instead, they operated in a disconnected state, treating their work as mere drudgery. This lack of care permeates modern life, from poorly written technical manuals to shoddy workmanship. The narrator finds examples everywhere. In mass-produced furniture that falls apart, in customer service representatives who recite scripts without understanding, in teachers who mechanically follow curricula without engaging with their subject matter. The fundamental problem, he suggests, isn't technology itself, but our relationship to it, our failure to care about what we're doing. This division between classic and romantic understanding has created a society where people either fear technology or worship it blindly, rather than developing a balanced, caring relationship with the technical world around them. The solution, the narrator suggests, lies in bridging this divide, in learning to see both the beauty and the underlying order in all things, whether changing a motorcycle's oil or writing a poem. This integration of classic and romantic understanding leads to what he calls quality, a state where technical excellence and aesthetic appreciation become inseparable. The heart of the book is Phaedrus's quest to understand quality, that mysterious property we recognize but struggle to define. This pursuit began innocently when a colleague asked if he was teaching quality to his rhetoric students. The question haunted him because he realized he couldn't define quality, though he constantly evaluated his students' work based on it. When Phaedrus asked his students to write essays defining quality, they rebelled. "How are we supposed to know what quality is? You're supposed to tell us." But when he had them compare two essays, they overwhelmingly agreed which was better. This proved they already understood quality, even if they couldn't define it. This insight led to a revolutionary teaching approach. Rather than teaching rhetoric techniques as rigid rules, he presented them as tools for achieving quality. Students who previously hated English began spending more time on it than anything else. But for Phaedrus, this was just the beginning of a much deeper philosophical inquiry. He discovered that quality cannot be defined because it precedes definition itself. It exists in the moment before intellectual analysis divides experience into subject and object. Quality is not a thing, he concluded. It is an event, the event at which the subject becomes aware of the object. This led to his most radical insight. Quality isn't caused by subjects and objects. Rather, subjects and objects are created by the quality event. The sun of quality does not revolve around the subjects and objects of our existence. It has created them. They are subordinate to it. As the journey progresses, the narrator delves deeper into Phaedrus's exploration of Western philosophy's foundations. He traces how Plato and Aristotle fundamentally altered Western thought by elevating rational analysis above all other forms of understanding. Before them, the ancient Greeks valued arete, excellence, or virtue that encompassed all aspects of life, not just rational thought. This holistic excellence included physical prowess, emotional intelligence, artistic expression, and practical wisdom, all considered equally vital components of human achievement. The Sophists, whom Plato vilified, taught this broader understanding of excellence. They emphasize the importance of rhetoric, practical wisdom, and the ability to navigate life's complexities with skill and grace. But Plato transformed this dynamic concept into the good, a fixed, eternal idea subordinate to truth itself. This shift marked a crucial turning point where abstract reasoning began to overshadow experiential wisdom. Aristotle then further demoted practical wisdom by elevating logical analysis and categorization, creating elaborate systems of classification that would become the foundation of Western scientific thought. This historical moment, the narrator argues, birthed modern scientific understanding while diminishing our capacity for holistic wisdom. The split between subject and object, between the knower and the known, became deeply embedded in Western consciousness. This separation created a framework where nature became something to be studied and controlled rather than experienced and understood from within. This explains why modern technology feels so alienating despite its practical benefits. We've gained tremendous power through scientific knowledge, but lost an empire of understanding of equal magnitude, an understanding of what it is to be a part of the world and not an enemy of it. This alienation manifests in countless ways. Our disconnection from natural cycles, our tendency to view problems purely mechanically, and our struggle to find meaning in a world reduced to measurable quantities. The narrator illustrates this through a wall he once saw in Korea. It wasn't beautiful because of planning or stylization, but because the workers approached it with the right mindset, doing it right without separating themselves from their work. The craftsmen maintained a unity with their task, allowing their actions to flow naturally from their understanding rather than following predetermined rules. This exemplifies what he calls quality, a state of harmony between subject and object, worker and work. The solution isn't rejecting technology, but transcending dualistic thought to create a fusion between human spirit and the material world. This requires developing what the narrator terms a metaphysics of quality that bridges the gap between classical and romantic understanding, between objective analysis and subjective experience. Such an integration would allow us to maintain the benefits of technological advancement while recovering the lost wisdom of direct experience and intuitive understanding. Some of the book's most practical wisdom emerges from discussions of motorcycle maintenance. The narrator introduces the concept of gumption, the combination of care, enthusiasm, and perseverance needed to complete any worthwhile task. This vital force is what separates masterful work from mere competence, and its presence or absence often determines success in any endeavor, whether mechanical, artistic, or intellectual. Various gumption traps can deplete this essential resource. External setbacks like broken tools or bad weather, internal hang-ups such as anxiety or impatience, or value rigidity that prevents seeing new solutions. The narrator identifies three main categories of gumption traps: setbacks from external circumstances, psychological blocks stemming from previous experiences, and the tendency to force solutions based on preconceived notions rather than present reality. Particularly valuable is his discussion of stuckness, those moments when progress seems impossible, like facing a stripped screw that won't budge. Such moments occur not just in mechanical work, but in all aspects of life. Writing blocks, design challenges, or personal decisions where no clear path forward exists. Traditional scientific method fails in these moments because it demands objectivity and subject-object separation, creating an artificial divide between the observer and the observed. Quality exists precisely at the intersection of subject and object, where this separation dissolves. The narrator illustrates this through examples of motorcycle repair, where the best solutions often come not from technical manuals, but from a deep, intuitive understanding of the machine's nature and needs. This understanding emerges only when one stops seeing the motorcycle as an object separate from oneself. Rather than fearing stuckness, the narrator suggests cultivating it as a zero moment of consciousness, similar to what Zen Buddhists seek. This empty mind state allows one to see problems freshly, rather than forcing them into predetermined categories. It requires letting go of ego, expectations, and the desire for immediate solutions. The longer one stays with stuckness, peacefully accepting it rather than fighting against it, the more quality reality emerges to provide solutions. This approach transforms seemingly insurmountable obstacles into opportunities for deeper understanding. Whether dealing with mechanical problems, creative challenges, or life decisions, the key lies in maintaining gumption while embracing moments of stuckness as natural parts of any meaningful process. The narrator suggests specific practices, like taking breaks, stepping back to gain perspective, and approaching problems with renewed curiosity rather than frustration. Phaedrus's philosophical journey culminated in a comprehensive metaphysical system that challenged traditional Western philosophical dichotomies. When his English faculty colleagues presented him with what seemed an insurmountable dilemma, does quality exist in things we observe, or subjectively in the observer, he achieved a profound breakthrough. Quality, he realized, is neither subjective nor objective, but exists as a third entity independent of both. It manifests at the precise meeting point of subject and object, chronologically and conceptually preceding their separation into distinct categories. This revolutionary insight resolved the classic romantic split by revealing them as different temporal aspects of the same underlying quality. The romantic perspective represents immediate present experience, the direct, unanalyzed appreciation of reality, while the classic view considers past and future relationships, analyzing patterns and connections. Quality itself resists philosophical definition because traditional philosophical explanation necessarily breaks experience into subjects and predicates, while quality remains simple, immediate, and direct. It's the pre-intellectual cutting edge of reality that exists before our minds divide experience into categories. Searching for validation of his theories, Phaedrus discovered striking parallels between his concept of quality and Eastern philosophical traditions, particularly in the 2,400-year-old Tao Te Ching. When reading through this ancient text, he found that substituting quality for Tao created perfect philosophical alignment. The Tao's description as an undefinable force that precedes and gives rise to all things matched his understanding of quality exactly. This discovery triggered an avalanche of awareness, connecting ancient Eastern wisdom with his modern philosophical insights. Though this overwhelming realization eventually contributed to his mental breakdown. The narrator strengthens these philosophical insights by connecting them to scientific discovery, particularly through Henri Poincaré's groundbreaking work on mathematical invention. Poincaré documented how his most significant mathematical breakthroughs came unexpectedly during mundane activities, while boarding a bus, walking along seaside bluffs, or stepping onto a curb. These insights arrived with immediate certainty and completeness, emerging from what Poincaré termed the subliminal self. This unconscious mind selects solutions based on mathematical beauty and harmony, rather than logic alone. This process perfectly complements Phaedrus's metaphysics. The harmony Poincaré described isn't merely subjective preference, but represents the anterior force that creates both subjects and objects, the quality that precedes intellectual division. This unified theory of quality offers a bridge between Eastern and Western thought, between artistic and scientific creativity, and between immediate experience and analytical understanding. It suggests that beneath our constructed categories and divisions lies a fundamental unity, accessible through direct experience, but resistant to conventional analytical frameworks. The philosophical journey intertwines with the personal relationship between the narrator and his son. Throughout the trip, Chris struggles with his father's emotional distance, not understanding why the man he knew has been replaced by someone who seems detached and preoccupied. Their relationship deteriorates as they climb a mountain together, with Chris pushing himself to exhaustion to prove his worth. The narrator realizes he's been forcing Chris into the same ego-driven proof of manhood challenges he despises. When you try to climb a mountain to prove how big you are, he reflects, you almost never make it, and even if you do, it's a hollow victory. The difference between ego climbing and selfless climbing is that the ego climber is here, but he's not here. He rejects the here, is unhappy with it. What he's looking for, what he wants, is all around him. but he doesn't want that because it is all around him. As their journey nears its end, the tension between them reaches a breaking point. The narrator decides to send Chris home, fearing his own mental stability. But in this moment of crisis, something remarkable happens. Phaedrus's voice emerges, saying, "Everything is all right now, Chris. I haven't forgotten you." This voice calms Chris, who looks up with momentary clarity. Chris finally reveals the trauma he's carried for years, standing with his mother on one side of a glass door while his father stood on the other side after being committed to a mental institution. The narrator recognizes this scene from his own recurring dreams. In a moment of clarity, he accepts his identity. "I am Phaedrus." When Chris asks if he was really insane, the narrator instinctively answers, "No." Chris's eyes sparkle as he responds, "I knew it," suggesting he's long suspected his father's treatment was unjustified. This reconciliation transforms their relationship. Chris stands on the footpegs of the motorcycle, delighted to finally see over his father's shoulders rather than staring at his back. "It's all different," he says with wonder. The narrator realizes they're connected in ways they never fully understood. Chris was always the real reason for leaving the hospital. "I haven't been carrying him at all," he realizes. "He's been carrying me." The book concludes with a profound sense of hope tempered by devastating tragedy. In an afterword written years later, we learn of Chris's tragic end. Murdered in San Francisco in 1979, stabbed after being robbed at knife point near the Zen Center where he had been studying. The author, devastated by this senseless loss, wrestles deeply with the metaphysical question of where Chris went. Through his grief, he arrives at a profound realization that Chris wasn't merely flesh and blood, but rather a pattern, a form of quality itself that existed larger than their individual relationship and continued beyond physical existence. This understanding is tested when his wife unexpectedly conceived shortly after Chris's death. Their initial reaction was to terminate the pregnancy, feeling overwhelmed by recent events. However, they experienced a strange and powerful dissociation during the decision-making process that made them pause and ultimately reverse their choice. The author describes this as a primitive way of looking at things, suggesting that somehow, through means that transcend rational explanation, Chris had found his way back, this time as a little girl named Nell. "The pattern continues," he writes with quiet amazement, "and things are better now." This bittersweet conclusion powerfully reinforces the book's central message. True understanding transcends rational analysis and scientific method. The peace that comes from harmonizing our technological and emotional lives, from caring deeply about what we do, cannot be reached through intellectual effort or logical deduction alone. It requires a fundamental shift in perception that allows us to see quality directly, before the mind divides experience into subject and object, before we separate the world into discrete categories and analyses. The author demonstrates this through his own journey of acceptance and understanding. The mechanical precision of motorcycle maintenance serves as both literal practice and metaphor for life's larger challenges. Just as a skilled mechanic must develop an intuitive feel for the machine beyond mere technical knowledge, we must develop an intuitive understanding of life that transcends pure rationality. The motorcycle journey ends, but the philosophical journey continues, expanding into new dimensions of understanding. As the narrator observes with hard-won wisdom, trials never end, of course. Unhappiness and misfortune are bound to occur as long as people live. But there is a feeling now. We've won it. It's going to get better now. You can sorta tell these things. This isn't mere optimism, but rather a deep recognition that understanding quality, in machines, in relationships, in life itself, brings a peace that surpasses intellectual understanding. Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance remains powerful because it addresses fundamental questions that still haunt our technological society. How can we live meaningfully in a world dominated by machines and systems? How can we reconcile scientific understanding with intuitive wisdom? How can we care deeply about our work and our relationships in a culture that often values efficiency over excellence? These questions have only grown more urgent in our digital age, where artificial intelligence and automation increasingly shape our daily experiences. The book offers no easy answers, but suggests a path forward. Recognizing that quality, that ineffable sense of what's good, beautiful, and true, precedes all our intellectual divisions. This concept of quality manifests in countless ways, in the precise tolerance of an engine cylinder, in the rhythm of a well-written sentence, in the thoughtful design of a user interface, or in the careful preparation of a meal. By cultivating awareness of quality in everything we do, from maintaining a motorcycle to raising a child, we can begin to heal the divisions within ourselves and our culture. This attention to quality becomes a form of meditation, a way of being fully present in whatever task we undertake. The narrator's journey from fragmentation to wholeness, from alienation to connection, offers hope that we too can reconcile the competing aspects of our nature. We can be both rational and intuitive, both technological and spiritual, both independent and deeply connected to others. This integration is demonstrated throughout the book in practical ways. The methodical troubleshooting of mechanical problems becomes a form of philosophical inquiry, while moments of pure aesthetic appreciation inform technical understanding. The motorcycle maintenance manual and the Zen meditation cushion are not as far apart as they might seem. The book's influence extends far beyond its initial readership, inspiring generations of readers to seek this integration in their own lives. Software developers find parallels in coding elegance. Craftspeople recognize it in their pursuit of excellence, and educators see it in their approach to teaching. The text's enduring relevance lies in its demonstration that the deepest technical knowledge and the highest spiritual insights are not opposing forces, but complementary paths to understanding the same fundamental reality. In our increasingly complex world, this message of integration and mindful engagement with both technology and human values becomes ever more essential.